point to have got to, because this morning Paul is talking about two homes, this earthly tent and this heavenly dwelling. I wonder what you think about when you think about home. Is home to you this morning the building you came from? You slept in it last night, you've come out of it this morning, that's what home is to you. Or is home, when I mention the word home, is it the place where you grew up? Or the town you grew up in? Do you this morning have a place you can call home? Today we're thinking about home not as the place where you've come from, whether it's just a few minutes ago or years ago, but rather home as a place you're going to. Paul writes, we have a building from God, an eternal house in heaven. You know, this is really good news, and it lies at the heart of everything that we're thinking about today. You and I are one day going to the most amazing place, a place we'll be able to call home. Well, as you know, those of you who've been here over the past few weeks, we're studying Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. It's his second letter that we've got record of anyway, hence it's called to Corinthians. Corinth, I suppose, thinking about it, was a nice place to call home. I think in some ways, you know, it was very different to Reading, but actually had some similarities as well, I'm sure. It was a Roman colony, so that makes it very different, obviously, to Reading. But this meant that it was a safe place. And I think we'd agree that on a global scale, Reading is a fairly safe place to grow up in. It had a Greek culture. Well, that makes it very different from Reading. It had been Greek until about 100 years prior to Paul visiting it. But this meant it was an educated place. Well, sums up Reading, doesn't it? With its university, with good schools and places to study. Corinth was on a crossroads. We say, well, Reading's not really a crossroads, but a lot of trade goes past here, be it the M4 or flying over our heads as it circles to get into Heathrow. It meant that Corinth was a prosperous place. And I think we describe Reading on the whole as a prosperous place, trading with various parts of the Roman Empire, trading, in our case, with various parts of the world. Well, Corinth had its good side, but it wasn't all good. It was also infamous as well, I'm afraid to say. It was a place where, on the moral front, pretty much anything went. The skyline was dominated by huge temples dedicated to the worship of a number of different gods. Women and children as well were often poorly treated and what today we call sexually abused. So here we have two sides to Corinth, a place where there was money to be made and trade to be done. But we also had to face the reality that much of that prosperity was built on very shaky foundations. Therefore, Paul is writing to a prosperous city, but a city where many people are pretty confused about how life is supposed to be led. And Paul writes to a group of people who are trying to follow Jesus. And it can't have been easy for the early church in Corinth. Because they've got two rather fairly large letters written to them by Paul, we tend to assume this was a big church meeting in a rather wonderful building that would have been a large cathedral-like building. Most likely, they met at the home of a wealthy follower of Jesus. They'd be what we might have called a house church. Slightly bigger than that, because if it was a wealthy home, it would have had a fairly spacious setup. Nonetheless, we're not talking about large numbers of people. And so we've got a relatively small, certainly quite young church trying to remain faithful to Jesus while surrounded by all the temptations and noise of a culture that had gone very wrong. So at this point in the letter, what's Paul up to? Well, he's trying to encourage Jesus' followers to keep the focus on the things that really mattered. Paul writes in verse 7, just as Angela read out 2 minutes ago, we live by faith, not by sight. We live by faith, not by sight. How can we, in Reading, as sophisticated as we are this morning, how can we live by faith, not by sight? Well, the first thing Paul suggests to us this morning is that if we want to live by faith, we need to be careful which house we keep our focus on. Now, I have to say this morning, speaking here, I know this morning that housing is a major issue and a major cost if we're trying to live in Reading or Lower Airlie. This is not an easy place to live in. Some of us have our own houses, or to be more accurate, we owe a large amount of money to various lenders in order to live in our houses. Others of us may have paid off these loans. Others may be renting. Whatever your status, when it comes to housing, if you're a follower of Jesus, you have two houses. You're looking a little confused. You're thinking, well, I can just about manage to afford one house in Lower Airlie. I know that some people have two houses, but on the whole, it's a bit tricky that. But honestly, all of us here this morning have two houses. If you follow Jesus, person at the back, you've got two houses. If you follow Jesus, I've got two houses. If you follow Jesus, yes, even if you don't own any house at all and you're too young to get a mortgage, you still have two houses. The first house, Paul describes as an earthly tent. An earthly tent. Now, I know here I'm going to cause some controversy this morning, because I know that in the congregation this morning we have some people who really enjoy camping. We have some people who are more than happy to go camping for a weekend or even longer. As I've shared with you before, you'll know that personally I'm not in that category. The appeal of camping is something that I'm afraid that never really made it to my shell. I think it's got something to do with going to a big Christian youth festival when I was a new minister in our previous church. We had to camp. I think the event, because I don't want to end up getting into trouble this morning, may have been called, it sounded a bit like Mole Survivor, shall we say. It was sold to us as 5 days of heaven, a showground in the west of England with hundreds of young people, all of us having to live in tents. It was a tent hater's version of the place that isn't heaven. For a start, I spent most of day one trying to get a tent up. And when I finally got my tent looking semi-upright, one of the young people came along and shoved it over, which I was not too impressed about, especially as I was supposed to be the youth leader. The sun came out and we all got sunburned, because no one had ever thought that it was going to be sunny in the west of England, and none of us had brought sun cream. There were portaloos, which I don't really think should have been called portaloos, more like, anyway, something else. The showers were interesting. Not only that, but on one of the evenings, I forget which evening, the worship leader got really carried away and prayed significantly, and for a long time, God, rain down, rain down. He kept on saying, God, rain down, rain down. Well, God answered that prayer. It rained and rained down, accompanied with a bit of thunder and lightning too. When Anne was talking about taking a group to the big church day out and camping there, I said to Anne, I said, well, I am staying here. Andrew will need some supervision for his revision, and I'm staying here. And then Anne said something that caused great hilarity around our table, because we were all sitting there having lunch. She said, oh, I was hoping you'd come along and help put the tent up. For some reason, Andrew and Hannah just thought that was the funniest thing they'd heard from Anne in a long time. Paul writes, while we're in this tent, we groan and are burdened. Paul, I've had camping trips like that too. What's Paul saying? Well, he's not saying that camping is a bad thing, clearly. But he is saying that our first home is an earthly tent. And as the tent maker would know, it's temporary. It's somewhere you only should spend a short time in. You would not want to spend a long time in a tent. Now, long time will vary. For some of us, it may be a couple of weeks. For some of us, it may be a couple of hours. What Paul's saying is that our first home, our earthly tent, is only pitched for a little while. Why then, we must ask ourselves, do we spend so much time worrying about our tent? The tent is soon coming down and going to be packed away. When we worry about our tents, it almost sounds a bit silly, doesn't it? I mean, who would go on a pamping holiday and spend a fortune on a luxurious tent? I told you it could be controversial this morning. I think it's a contradiction in terms to call a tent luxurious, personally. I don't see much point in buying an expensive tent from a posh shop like Decathlon or Blacks, possibly. Just get it from Lidl's. And then when your tent ends up pitched up in the skip, which is where every tent I've ever had has ended up, at least you won't be saying to yourself, well, I paid a fortune for that. If you go camping, you don't invest in taking a washing machine with you, or a dishwasher, or even an ensuite bathroom. Again, I know this may be a bit controversial, but seriously, folks, I don't think you should have a toilet in your tent. It's not good for anyone in the campsite. If you get your tent and pitch it up, you don't go planting flowers outside your tent or mowing the lawn. You don't put up a letterbox or a sign saying, home, sweet home. If you go to tents, you don't work extra hours so you can afford the extension to your tent. You don't take a big loan to get the biggest tent you could possibly afford, even if it's going to mean working some extra hours. If you've got a tent, you don't save up to convert the loft or try to upsize the stupid thing. Honestly, if you've got a tent and you've invested in anything more than a tent, again, this may be very, very controversial. I think it looks a bit stupid. There's no other word for it. You don't put gnomes outside your tent. You don't put a suite of furniture in the front room of your tent. You don't buy a TV or anything else that could be considered remotely comfortable or useful in a tent. You don't paint your tent or sit dreaming of what you'll do with your tent when you retire. Why? Because even if you love camping, much as that seems a bizarre concept to me, you know fine your tent is temporary. Paul knows about temporary tents. And what he's saying here is that our lives are just like those temporary tents. By all means, he says, take care of it. You know, you've got it. Don't put too much weight on it. Don't rip it down early. Don't wreck it. Look after yourself. Take care of what God has given you. But accept this vital truth. It's a temporary tent. All this stuff, all this house you took that loan out for, all these hours you spent working at building your career, all these things you put before God and being with God's people, it's like buying extras for your tent. All that stuff, all that sweat, all that stress, all that worry, for what? For an earthly tent. So you and I have two homes this morning, don't we? We have home number one, our earthly tent. But let's get it straight from Paul. This one is on the way out. Don't wreck it, don't prematurely destroy it, but don't overinvest in it. It's going to be packed away, and you're getting a second home. A second home. Paul calls it a heavenly dwelling. Dwelling. To me, that sounds so much more comfortable than tent. I like the sound of the word dwelling. It sounds sort of homely, doesn't it? Maybe you don't agree. It's the kind of place you feel you'd like to stay at for a while. It's the kind of place you'd like to settle down in and put perhaps a little sign up saying, done roaming. Dwelling. It's a place you long to see at the end of a long, long journey. A home. You may very well pick up a cheap tent in Lidl's. I believe Asda's do them too. But a dwelling requires more investment. You can't just pick that off the shelf, can you? Verse 5, Paul writes, now it is God who made us for this very purpose and has given us a spirit, the spirit, I should say, as a deposit, guaranteeing what is to come. There's some key words here, isn't there? It is God who made us. You and I are made for a purpose. And the Holy Spirit is our deposit, guaranteeing our place in our future dwelling, guaranteeing that our place is secure. God made us for a purpose. God made you for eternity. God made you to dwell with him. Knowing who made you knowing your purpose and knowing you're made for eternity, well, Paul indicates here quite clearly these should change the details of our focus. Instead of looking at the earthly tent, our careers, our finances, our health, whatever, instead of looking after the earthly tent, we instead focus on investing in our heavenly dwelling. We live by faith, says Paul, not by sight. People who go camping need the security of knowing everything is tied down and under control. It's one of my huge problems with camping. I never have a clue which rope goes where. They need to, of course, because the tent is flimsy. And in the winds or in a storm, to be perfectly honest, it's not going to be a huge amount of use. Heavenly dwellers don't need to have everything under control. They don't need to have the dwelling roped down or tied down. It's secure in its own right. So where are you living this morning? The earthly tent, is this where you're only focusing on? Or do you find your security in God's heavenly house? If you take one thing away this morning, and maybe this links into what else is being said, we need to stop trying to control everything. A flimsy tent needs lots of control, lots of pressure to keep it in place. A heavenly dwelling will manage quite fine on its own. It's a key difference, surely, between focusing on the earthly tent and our heavenly dwelling. In the first one, we think we're in control. If we work harder, we'll get more money. If we invest correctly, we'll be able to afford that extension or whatever. In the heavenly dwelling, we're not in control. God's in control. So if we're not to be focused on the short-term things that we think we control, what are we to do with our lives? Paul writes, verse 9, so we make it our goal to please him. We make it our goal to please him. I remember when our dog was a young dog. Some of you may also remember that. It was quite a traumatic experience, wasn't it? Because he wasn't really terribly obedient, it must be said. However, you know, Hannah's here. She can confirm we did take him to dog training classes. And at these classes, despite the fact that he had a short-term memory problem, quite clearly, he could remember things briefly, but not any long-term sort of thing, he did want to please us, didn't he? He did, when we said sit, he did, on the whole, want to sit. He wanted to please us. Why? Because he knew that in the hand that we were holding in front of him, there was probably a reward. So if he pleased us, he would get a little reward. In fact, it's fair to say our dog wanted to please us at home as well. In the case of our dog, as he was settling in, he dug up several plants from the garden and presented them to me at the back door with that look that said, here's the present I've brought for you. It wasn't quite the look I gave him in return. But he was eager to please. He wanted me to keep him, I suppose. He wanted to get the reward for pleasing us. I wonder this morning if we can make it our goal to please our Heavenly Father. So we make it our goal, says Paul, to please him. So where have we got to this morning? Well, it could be this. Paul, a tent maker, is warning us not to put all our attention, all our focus on the short-term stuff of this life that is shortly to break down and fade away. Our earthly tent, while useful for our time on earth, is short-term. Instead, Paul encouraged us to focus on our heavenly home, our dwelling with God that is forever. That's where our treasures, our investments should be going. That's where we should be living our life, walking by faith, not by sight, making sure that we're doing the stuff of the kingdom of God. And as we're going to God's home, we need to let God worry about many of the details. Our goal is not to control the place, because God's already got it under control. Our goal is simply to please God. And by focusing, not on the stuff that's all around us, but on our heavenly home where we're going for eternity, we find our lives being changed. Paul writes, we live by faith, not by sight. We're going to hand over to Angela just now. And to do so, I'll go and sit down. But we continue our thoughts. How do we live by faith, not by sight?